I'm Tony Cox, and this is News and Notes. Here's writer and activist Flores Forbes, who spoke earlier with NPR's Farai Chidea.
San Diego policemen began kicking my ass from the time I was 12 years old. By 16, I had decided that I would do something about it. I wanted to get back at them and do something to help my people overcome the oppression we all experience living in America. So on one warm summer morning in 1968, I hooked a U-turn on Imperial Avenue and pulled my parents' 1960 Mercury in front of what appeared to be the local office of the Black Panther Party.
That's Flores Forbes, author of a new book, Will You Die With Me? My Life and the Black Panther Party. From the age of 16, he was involved with the party and has written a memoir about his years there. Flores, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So your book is chock full of the coming of age of a young black man and also of the life and death of a political party. You floated around different parts of California working for the Panthers. I won't say floated is the wrong word, but intentionally moved around to different headquarters.
Right.
And at the top of one of your chapters, you just have a little note. Los Angeles was known in Panther lore as the Red Zone.
Right.
There were constant shootouts with the police and 11 Panthers, one-fourth of all Panther fatalities from 1966 to 1977, died here.
Right.
Explain to us what Los Angeles was like when you worked there for the Panthers, and what were you doing specifically?
I guess it was the closest thing that you may experience in this country to being in a combat zone. We had to reinforce our offices. They were sandbagged. And one of our major functions there is we were organizing. We did that mainly through selling the Black Panther newspaper and organizing dozens of free breakfast programs for school children and basically organizing young African Americans around issues of self-defense.
Now, when you talk about self-defense, you were dealing with the legalities of owning guns, marching with guns, and dealing with laws that were not put on the books necessarily for black people, which made it very controversial for the Panthers to do what they did. Let me just ask you this straight out.
Right.
What made you think you could get away with this?
I don't think it was a matter of getting away with it. I think it was a matter of survival. You know, putting myself into context of that particular period, and I really believe that, you know, my survival depended on me being able to defend myself in this country.
I'm going to jump ahead in your story a little bit. You were shot and wounded and tried to escape. Tell us about the circumstances of that day.
That was in October 1977, and I was involved with the military arm of the organization and had been for about 6 years. I concocted a plot to kill a witness. The witness was testifying against Huey Newton, who had just recently returned from Cuba, and he had been in exile for about 3 years. And we had a plan to kill the witness the morning of his preliminary hearing, and the operation got botched, and I was wounded. Another Panther was killed, and from that point on, I became a fugitive, of which I was for the next 3 years.
And then what happened?
Well, I was a fugitive for 3 years. I turned myself in, and I was convicted of felony murder, and I went to prison in California, and I served 4 years, 8 months, and 9 days in the California Department of Corrections.
Who were you as a man when you walked into prison, and did it change by the time you walked out?
When I got to prison, I guess I was somewhat of a celebrity. Many of the people in prison knew of me from the streets of California. Ironically, when I got to Soledad, I ran into almost my entire neighborhood. People I had grown up with, played Little League baseball with, Pop Warner football with, went to church with, and they were also incarcerated. But when I got there, I was still a combatant. I was an urban guerrilla. And I was probably thinking about changing my life. But as soon as I walked into prison, I realized that I was going to have to keep the same demeanor and behavior that I had when I was on the street.
So what did the Panther movement accomplish in terms of considering violence or considering weapons as a tool of liberation? Did it make a difference?
I don't think it was the theater of the gun, because there was no way that we would win a shooting war in this country. I think that the difference came about through the survivor programs that the Black Panther Party created. I mean, today you still have free breakfast programs for school children. You have free lunch programs. You have free health clinics.
In some ways, it seems to me that you're saying that the bread was more powerful than the bullet in what the legacy of the Panthers is. And you now are a strategic officer of the Abyssinian Development Corporation in New York City, this organization that is really trying to work and transform Harlem. I just wonder a couple things. One, do you ever regret being involved in trying to murder someone? And two, does your work now flow directly out of what you did during the years as a Panther?
No, I don't regret anything that I did. That was my nature then. You know, I'm not going to be that remorseful. It's unfortunate that some of my friends were killed. That's the only thing I actually regret. Today, you know, well, you know, at one time we believed, you know, the organization was not going to last, but the struggle was going to continue. So what form and shape would it take? And I think that you have a lot of people who were in the Black Panther Party who were involved in legislative practice. You have people who are urban planners like myself who are involved in community development. And a lot of the issues that we're promoting are very similar to the issues that were in the Black Panther Party's 10-point platform and program.
Floris Forbes, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Floris Forbes is the author of Will You Die With Me? My Life and the Black Panther Party.